Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Are you ready for some great football history? Well, here's what happened on October 10th in football history. A couple of teams from the Windy City played their very first games, and Brett Favre celebrates his birthday. We have these great stories and even more in football history coming up in a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, your portal to positive football history. Welcome once again to the Pigpen. We are in October, and it's October 10th. And what great history has happened at this time of the year, because the professional football, the early professional football, is kicking in full swing. We've been seeing some of those games pop up here and there, some firsts for some teams. And we have more of that today. We're going to go to October 10th, 1920 as our first segment here, and that's the Chicago Cardinals. Yeah, the Chicago Cardinals. We just talked about them a couple weeks ago with probably the greatest Chicago Cardinals historian of all time, Joe Ziemba, who has written a great book, When Football Was Football, the Chicago Cardinals and the Birth of the NFL. And if you don't have a copy of that book, please, you need to go online and get a copy of that, because it's just tremendous on the great history of the NFL's longest running, oldest team, the Cardinals. Now, as Joe explained to us, they started off as the Morgan Athletic Club, and I went through a couple different phases of some different clubs, Racine and Racine Pleasure Club. And finally, they took the name of the Chicago Cardinals. And in 1920, they played their very first game in the APFA, which was for the first 2 years. It was actually the first 2 years of the NFL, because after 2 years, the APFA changed its name to the National Football League. Well, the game was against crosstown rivals, the Chicago Tigers, and it ended in a 0-0 draw. Now, Patty Driscoll, the very famous quarterback running back of that team, was the head coach of this version of the Cardinals, who ended the season with a 6-2-1 record, and they placed fourth in the APFA. Now, exactly 1 year later, the former Decatur Staleys played their first game as the Chicago Staleys and won that game 14-10 over the visiting Rock Island Independents. Now, let's go into a little bit more history on this. Now, because Joe told us about the Chicago Cardinals. Now, so let's go into about the Chicago Bears. And a certain man named George Halas, in his book, Halas by Halas, had this little segment. He said, in March of 1920, a man telephoned me, George Chamberlain, and he was the general superintendent of the A.E. Staley Company. In 1919, the company's fellowship club had formed a football team. It had done well against other local teams, but Mr. Staley wanted to build it into a team that could compete successfully with the best semi-professional and industrial teams in the country. Mr. Chamberlain asked if I would like to come to Decatur and work for the Staley Company. Now, if you remember George Halas, he was a player at Illinois, the University of Illinois, and then he had some military service, played on a military team, played in the Rose Bowl. I believe his team won the Rose Bowl in 1917, and might have been 1918. And but he caught a touchdown pass in that game, so he was a very successful player at college and in the military teams at the Rose Bowl. So he goes and takes over the team of A.E. Staley's company. And they were originally called the Decatur Staleys. They George Halas was one of the members of the original people that showed up at Ralph Hayes Automobile Showroom September 17, 1920. So that's basically when the Decatur Staleys incorporated, as we talked back on September 17th. So they were the A. Staley Food Starch Company of Decatur, Illinois, as the company team, and they played in the NFL, the APFA, 1920, and then they moved to Chicago. They had Halas and Earl Dutch Sterneman were running the team, and they wanted to move the team to Chicago, have a little bit bigger venue and a little bit better draw. So Mr. Staley sold the club to George Halas and Dutch Sterneman in 1921, and they were called the Chicago Staleys. Now, full control was turned over, to the team that year, 1921, to Sterneman and Halas. And in 1922, the Staleys changed their name to the Chicago Bears. And that's how that came about. So let's go back to that 1921 game. They won 14-10 over the Rock Island Independents. The Staleys ended the season where they played every game in Chicago, sporting a 10-1-2 record. The following season, owner-coach George Halas would rename that team the Chicago Bears, as we discussed. October 10th, 1960, the CFL rushing record for a single game is reached when Ron Stewart of the Ottawa Rough Riders runs for 287 yards in a game against the Montreal Alouettes. According to the American Football Database, .fandom.com, Stewart capped off his 1960 season by winning the CFL's Most Outstanding Canadian Award. In his 13-year career, he ran for 5,690 yards on 983 attempts, scoring 42 touchdowns. October 10th, 1976, the Giants Stadium in Rutherford, New Jersey opens up its gates for the first time. But the Dallas Cowboys, they put a little damper on the party that day when they handed the New York Giants a 24-14 loss in the stadium's debut game. October 10th, 1994, the New York Football Giants in the news again. They retired the jersey number 56 in honor of their great former linebacker, Lawrence Taylor, probably maybe the best defensive player ever in the National Football League. What a dominant player he certainly was. Deserved to have his number retired, that great 56 in blue. So let's take a little break and hear a word from our sponsor right now.
Hey, are you ready for some football? Some fantasy football? How about some daily fantasy football? Silly questions, right? Of course you are. You're ready to talk some smack and win some cash every Sunday and Thursday and Monday and whenever there's football games. The Sports History Network invites you to play your daily fantasy football this season at ThriveFantasy.com. Thrive Fantasy offers hundreds of thousands, millions in cash every day on NBA, MLB, PGA, golf, cricket, esports, and of course, NFL football. Every week during the 2021 NFL season, Thrive Fantasy has pool play contests and heads-up matches with prizes of all sizes, and even free play contests for real money. Sign up with Thrive Fantasy today to get a 100% match bonus on your first deposit for up to $100 in free daily fantasy football play. Visit sportshistorynetwork.com/thrive. That's THRIVE. Or enter promo code SHN when depositing at the cashier. Join Thrive Fantasy today, earn cash prizes, and support great shows like this at the Sports History Network. Now that's a win-win-win situation for you to kick off your own NFL season.
That's a very solid sponsor, so please make sure you take a look at their product and check out their website. Let's go to some Hall of Fame birthdays for October 10th. October 10th, 1894, Walter Gordon. He was a guard/tackle from the University of California that played from 1916 through the 1918 season. Walter grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and he was the grandson of a slave. And Mr. Gordon became one of the first black football players on the West Coast. The National Football Foundation's bio on him tells us that Gordon was a great lead blocker on offense and a hard-hitting tackler on defense. The National Football Foundation selected him to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in 1975. And after graduation, Walter joined the Berkeley Police Force. went to law school and became a lawyer in 1922. He coached football and did some scouting for California University, and eventually President Dwight D. Eisenhower appointed him the governor of the U.S. Virgin Islands. That's a nice little tropical gig to get there. Some hardworking studying and football playing, and really going through the ranks of going through, especially as a racial minority, and really working his way up through the ranks and becoming a governor of a U.S. territory. Fantastic job. October 10th, 1920, Frank Sinkwich. He was a halfback from the University of Georgia, and he was born on that day. It's reported by the National Football Foundation that Frank did not desire to play halfback due to the fact that in that era of play, the halfbacks were the ones who threw the passes. His head coach thought otherwise, though, and Coach Wally Butts was right. The awkward, flat-footed Sinkwich worked hard at the halfback position. After many hours of practice, he became a great passer. In 1942, he set a national record for total offense with 2,187 yards, and over 1,300 of those were through the air. The big stage was set, where this player really shined, in the 1942 Orange Bowl, where Sinkwich put up a remarkable 382 all-purpose yards in a game. The National Football Foundation selected him to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in 1954. That just shows you that a lot of hard work and practice, even on something you don't initially want to do, well, you can become pretty good at it. Practice makes perfect. That's true. October 10th, 1922, Merv Pregelman. He was a center and tackle from the University of Michigan. According to the MGOBlue.com, Merv was an All-American at defensive tackle, but also played center and guard on the offense as well. The Green Bay Packers drafted Pregelman as the first round of the 1946 NFL draft, and he played there one season before going to Detroit to play with the Lions for two more years after playing his last with the New York Bulldogs in 1948. The National Football Foundation selected him to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in 1982. October 10, 1946, Dwayne Nix. He was a former Texas A&I tight end, and Dwayne was a Texas football star right out of the beginning, per the footballfoundation.org's bio on him. In three consecutive years, the youngster made the Associated Press Little All-America team. His college team, the Texas A&I Javelinas, were undefeated in the NAIA when he was a junior. And the next season, well, they won that national championship in the NAIA football. The National Football Foundation selected him to be entered into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 2003. Now here's the big name we advertised earlier. October 10th, 1969, Brett Favre. He played in the National Football League for 20 highly productive seasons, where he was a three-time NFL Player of the Year and made it into 11 Pro Bowls. Do we need to say anything more? Of course we do. Favre attended Southern Mississippi University, where he was a four-year starter at quarterback. And Brett was later picked by the Atlanta Falcons. Yes, the Falcons picked him in the second round, third overall, of the 1991 NFL Draft, according to his bio on the ProFootballHOF.com. Favre saw very limited action as a Falcon, so the next season, he was traded to the Green Bay Packers for a first-round draft pick. When starter Don Majakowski was injured in Week 3, Brett Favre became the starting quarterback of the Pack, and he never looked back. He started that season on a torrid pace that saw him go over 3,000-plus yards of passing in 18 straight seasons in the National Football League. In 1995, in the two following seasons, he took the Packers to the NFC Championship game and won Super Bowl 31. Brett played for the Packers through the 2007 season and then a season with the New York Jets before playing out his final 2 years as a member of the Minnesota Vikings. Like wine, Favre seemed to get better as he went on, because in 2009, it may have been his best season ever, as he finished that year with a 107.2 QB rating and tossed for 4,202 yards. Brett Favre was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in the year 2016. And what a deserving Hall of Famer he was. Very talented, very entertaining. If you've ever got to listen to some of his little mic'd up sayings that he said in games. They're just hilarious, talking to officials. The one where the gentleman that played Mr. Miyagi in the original Karate Kid series, he was in the stands, and Favre just kept telling one of his teammates, "Hey, there's Mr. Miyagi." That wasn't his real name, but that was just Brett Favre. And you can hear Brett all the time on Sirius XM NFL Radio. Very entertaining there as well. A very well-spoken man and a very great player, one of the best of all time at the quarterback position. So we're happy you joined us today for this little bit of football history. Hope we were able to entertain you and give you a little bit of remembrance of these great football players and plays and events from our past of our game, the last 150 years. And hope you'll join us again tomorrow. You can find us at pigskindispatch.com. Use that powerful Earl to Go search box that we have on our front page. Look up just about anything you want to, any name in a game of football, or follow our links on any of our articles. We have, you know, about 400 or 500 different articles in pigskindispatch.com, along with, you know, that many podcasts too. They're all there for your taking. You can also find us on your favorite podcast provider, and our podcasts are also on the sportshistorynetwork.com. So make sure you can enjoy them there as well. And we are just one of 24 different podcasters on sportshistorynetwork.com. So we hope you will take a chance to give some of those a listen as well. Until tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, football fans, this is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.